Welcome to the Fantasy Unicorns Podcast, a fantasy basketball podcast with a dynasty focus. Welcome all fantasy fiends to the reincarnation of the Fantasy Unicorns Podcast. We are a fantasy basketball podcast with a dynasty focus. Be sure to check out our website, thefantasyunicorns.com, for other content like articles, rankings, and even prospect rankings. We'll be picking things back up more as the season draws closer. Our previous host, Starks, has moved on to bigger and better things, but we certainly appreciate all he's done for us. You can give him a follow on Twitter at Starks_industry as he continues his own endeavors. But this train must keep a rolling, so we have some new hosts in the building here. My name's Jay. I used to hop on the old pod every now and then with Starks, but now you're stuck with me for good. I love all things basketball and fantasy, but I particularly specialize in prospects. You can follow me on Twitter at FantasyNBALayup. And our fellow host, Tony, new unicorn and Atlanta fan extraordinaire, is with me today, as he normally will be. What's going on, Tony? Let's hear a bit about yourself.
Hey, Jay, how's it going? Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be a part of this team, the Fantasy Unicorns family. From a fantasy perspective, I'm a general fantasy nut. Love fantasy basketball. Love the whole process of planning out teams and strategizing. I'm also just a massive NBA fan as a general point. I'm more of an X's and O's guy, so my analysis is generally focused on team fit, how a player might change to a different situation, different coach, different teammates, looking at on the court product and such and circumstance. So, hopefully going to be able to provide some insights to think about how someone's position might change through the year. So excited to be part of the team here and excited to talk some basketball and fantasy in today's episode.
Yeah, I think we're on the same page there, and I'm definitely looking forward to hearing your takes throughout the season. I'm also certainly looking forward to avoid any heated Saints-Falcons rivalry talk, particularly because this is a basketball podcast. Yeah, you're probably
right. It's inevitable. It's going to happen.
Yeah,
you know?
You're right.
But hey, that's just the reality of the situation that we're in.
Yeah, I guess so. But in addition to Tony and myself, we're also joined today by Mr. Mutually Beneficial and Taco Bell aficionado, the King of the Unicorns himself, Sir Kevin, first of his name. How's it going, Kev?
It's good, Jay. Thanks for having me here. I'm excited to get sort of the new look for the Fantasy Unicorns podcast. I know that you guys are going to do an amazing job, and I just wanted to selfishly be part of the first episode just to be here. But for those of you that remember, I was on the previous episodes with Jay and with Starks. I am the guy with the pushing the mutually beneficial trades. You know, I'm not one to Starks was for the rides, but I was definitely more for trying to make moves that improve my team, but also help the team that I'm working with to kind of build that relationship so that no one is left kind of feeling like they got ripped off. Because I feel like as seasons go on, you kind of establish these good relationships and people are more likely to work with you in the future. I'm a big fantasy fan. I've been doing it for, this is probably year 17 for me. And, once I started doing Dynasty a while back, I'm the old guy. That's fine. once I got started with Dynasty, that's just kind of been my love ever since. So it's been great to be part of building the Fantasy Unicorns brand and the website and being a part of the podcast and working with all these awesome guys that just know so much and have so much information to provide listeners and readers. And it's really cool to be a part of. So thanks for having me here.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're definitely fond of you joining us here today. All right, cool. Well, we all know the slow season is upon us. You know, free agency and the draft have come and gone. Many people probably have most of their attention turned to another sport. You know, the hype train that is the American football season is approaching. Baseball is doing its thing. Soccer might be doing something. I'm not sure. I don't exactly follow soccer as much as I'd like to. But FIBA is also in motion.
Don't hate.
Yeah, the men's FIBA team is in fact still playing, even though most of the talent has unfortunately dropped out. But the NBA never sleeps, so we won't either. There's always some fantasy basketball content to discuss, and today we'll touch on the release of the NBA schedule and who won and who lost in a nutshell. Then we'll dive into the 30-team Unicorn Dynasty League, where we just started drafting over the weekend. You know, it's a slow draft with people all across the globe, so the draft speed has been actually better than expected for a league such as this. But first, I think we should take a second to discuss this ugly DeMarcus Cousins injury, if you guys are ready to get this thing going.
Yeah.
It just seems like Cousins, he hasn't been able to catch a break ever since taking a pay cut to chase a ring with the Warriors, you know, which obviously didn't work to his expectation. But it looks like he tore his left ACL, and after already tearing an Achilles and tearing a quad, you know, his ACL, this is just brutal, and I kind of feel bad for the man now. But, hey, you know, going from the upper echelon of NBA talent to potential future minimum contract chaser, he'll obviously be out for most of the season, if not all of this season. Maybe he could push for a playoff return, but I'm not exactly holding my breath at this point. What I want to know from you guys is, how does this affect your perception of him, and how far would he have to fall in a dynasty league draft for you to consider grabbing him at this point? Tony, we can start with you. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, the question with DeMarcus, I think, has been the same question over the last couple of years. Can he stay healthy enough to stay on the court? And will he be able to come back at the same level that he was prior? So, you know, breaking down those questions, obviously for the short-term outlook for Boogie doesn't look good. He's not going to play this year, probably for most of the year. You can come back in a best-case scenario from an ACL injury within 8 months. So potentially he could maybe come back for the very end of the season before the playoffs. But even then, you know, what is it going to be like how Boogie was when he came back this year for the Warriors? Is he going to be able to contribute? Is he going to be able to move around the floor with a left leg that now has undergone 3 procedures? So, you know, is he going to be able to stay on the floor? Is he going to be able to run? Is he going to be able to block shots, score in the same way that he was before? Is he just going to take pull up, catch and shoot jumpers as he was doing all year long? You know, those are the types of questions that I think about when I think about, you know, am I going to make the decision to draft someone like a Boogie Cousins with the injury history that he has? From a dynasty perspective, you know, at this point, you really shouldn't be spending any serious capital, be it draft capital or otherwise, to go out getting DeMarcus Cousins. Unfortunately, due to his age now, you know, he's 28, 29, I think now. He's still super talented, but how much is he really going to give you on a night-to-night basis, even when he's fully recovered? Is it worth the potential headache of dealing with him? Personally, I'd say probably not, which is why, you know, as generally speaking, he's off of most of my draft boards, and I'm not interested in acquiring him for really anything unless it's at this point you're saying, I'll take a flyer, see what it'll be. You know, he'll eat up an IR spot for me for a while. And then when he comes back, you know, maybe I can flip him if he looks good, or hopefully he actually does perform and it's a welcome bench boost coming into next year or potentially in the playoffs a little bit sooner.
Yeah, I think all the initial questions you posted there are definitely all valid questions. You know, what will he be able to actually do when he returns? I don't expect him to be that same player he was before. But Kevin, what about you? Any general thoughts? And, you know, are you basically in the same boat? You know, at what point would you consider drafting him in dynasty leagues now?
Yeah, no, I feel really bad. And you mentioned his age. He I think had his birthday, and then a day or two after is when the injury happened. So he just turned 29.
Yeah,
rough birthday, but
that's tough.
And I feel so bad for him. You know, it's too bad that things have worked out the way they have for him, because he really was such a amazing offensive player, sort of unlike any other player in the league offensively, and had a really good skill set. And just I don't know what he's going to look like a year or two from now, if he's going to ever be that same guy. One thing I did notice when I was watching him in the playoffs is he did, you know, even though he was still not the same guy yet, it was still sort of in that recovery mode in the playoffs. When he got in, out there, he was showing off really good vision. The passing was really good, I thought, when he was in there. And that sort of stuff obviously doesn't get as affected by injuries like other things, other parts of his game. So maybe his game changes a little bit. He has to adapt and be a guy that relies a little bit less on athleticism and more on other skill sets. So I could see him coming back in a few years and being a relevant player. But for now, I probably wouldn't look at him until at least in the 200s in a draft, which is a pretty big fall from where he was just a few years ago. But yeah, I wouldn't even think about him until the draft hit the 200 mark. And even then, it would be sort of depending on how my team's looking, and probably be a pick that I wouldn't be super excited to make, but just sort of a gamble that I'd be willing to go for just in the off chance that he comes back in the 2020 season looking halfway decent, as a guy that can come in and sort of be maybe like a sixth man or something like that. But his career just, it may never be the same, and it's too bad.
I guess a question to follow up, and this is a question to both of you guys. What type of build do you think is best suited to making a play for a Boogie in that range, Kevin, that you talked about, right? Like, is it, you know, a contending team who is looking to potentially get a boost next year for an open spot? Is it a rebuilding team who says, oh, I'll take a late spot for Boogie and maybe by next year when I've got, you know, a younger roster, potentially he gives me something? What type of build works best if you say, I really love Boogie and I really want him on my team? What works?
Well, I think both situations probably would be good. So, I mean, if you do have a good team that's sort of a win-now team, you know, and you could handle, you know, riding him out on your IR for a year, and then kind of have that, you know, embarrassment of riches if he was a guy that came back and was productive the following year, that would be the ideal situation to kind of really solidify yourself as sort of a top team in the league. On the other hand, if you are a rebuilding team, you know, it's just another gamble of, this is an asset that maybe I can flip to a contending team next year for draft picks for young guys. So I think either way, you know, you're taking a gamble, but that's why you're not looking at them until you're hitting the 200 mark, at least in my opinion. But it's you know, there is some upside, and there is a chance that he could come back and be something, and whether that's for something that helps your team or someone that helps you through trading for assets.
Yeah, I think, let's see, he's 29 here, and I think he could squeeze into a team that, you know, feels like they're on the verge of contending, and maybe they're one piece away, you know, and their team's still young enough, you know, mid to late 20s, to where they could be competing for a while, or for at least another few years here, where he fits the timeline there, and kind of as kind of a low risk, high reward kind of stash here, where you're holding him, you're obviously holding him for this next year, where he'll, it's unlikely that he plays all season if maybe he comes back in the playoffs. But I also think it was a good point to bring up his passing, Kevin. Looks like he averaged 3.6 assists last year, which really helped his value. And, you know, his injury could affect that a little bit, just in terms of him being able to drive or get to different spots in order to help a teammate get open a little bit or something like that. But it shouldn't be overly affected by the injury. But yeah, he just really drew the short straw here, man. You know, as if tearing an Achilles wasn't bad enough, I'd probably just leave him to be someone else's problem. You know, I don't need that kind of stress on my fantasy team. I take enough risks as it is sometimes, and we all know I prefer the youth on my teams as opposed to the older guys, especially one as risky as him. You know, I don't see him getting back up to top 40 value here. It might even be struggle for him to get back up to top 50 here, you know. Obviously, there's always a chance he can give you numbers, but there's really nothing promised with him anymore here. If he was younger, he could be worth a flyer for me on a rebuilding team, like you were saying. But at this point, Boogie's outlook doesn't exactly fit any build I would be looking to create here. This definitely bolsters JaVale McGee's value, though, significantly. You know, he has a chance to even finish as a top 50, top 60 asset with AD preferring to play power forward. This probably also helps Kuzma a bit. With AD essentially being forced into some center minutes now, I've never been a big Kuzma fan, but he certainly rises a bit. And then there's the news that apparently the Lakers were granted permission to have talks with Dwight Howard recently. So we can take that for what it's worth. You know, maybe he could be the backup center and get just enough minutes to make a splash in 30 deep leagues. But other than that, I'm kind of out on Dwight at this point. But how are you guys feeling about JaVale McGee's value now? And if you want to touch on Kyle Kuzma or even Dwight Howard here, I'll pass the ball to you, Kevin, first.
I think we are on the same page with a lot of this stuff. I'm not a big Kuzma guy. I don't think he's really, I don't think his level of play really matches the hype that his name seems to bring. But he is going to get opportunity. He's going to get minutes now. It's inevitable. I do wish AD would just suck it up and play the five. And yeah. I feel like that's where he belongs. But, you know, he's going to get his way on this, and he'll probably be splitting that time down the middle, I would guess. But it opens up more time for JaVale, though JaVale's not really a guy that can stay on the court for that long. I know he has the asthma issue. You know, I could see him getting in the low 20s maybe. But that's still leaving minutes open for AD to play at the five. And then if Dwight comes on, I could see him, you know, putting in a 10 to 15 minute type of situation, which, you know, if you're in a really deep league, like sort of say like our 30 team league that we're drafting in right now, you know, if he comes in for, you know, 10 to 15 minutes, you know, he can get you a couple counting stats and some boards. And be valuable to a team that way. But again, we're only talking about sort of deeper leagues at the moment.
Yeah, and just to jump in for JaVale real quick, he only averaged about 22 minutes per game last year, and was still the 52nd ranked player in 9-cat leagues, which is, you know, that's an important distinction, you know, considering he doesn't need a ton of minutes to have pretty significant fantasy value. But I'll pass the ball to you here, Tony, and hear your take.
Yeah, I think the Lakers front court is a really interesting place to look for value. They really did not help themselves. Obviously, they were hoping to plug that hole with DeMarcus Cousins, but, you know, they really didn't make any signings other than Jared Dudley and JaVale McGee to cover their front court depth. And, you know, that question now becomes, how many minutes are you going to give to Kyle Kuzma playing the four? The answer probably is going to be quite a few. I like Kuzma. I don't know if I necessarily, I like him more as a small ball four than I like him as a pure play three. I think that he gives you some interesting rebounding opportunity just on the from the floor standpoint and where he'll play. He gives you a little bit of rebounding at the four, just like in the small ball lineup. And obviously the shooting and the being able to attack off the dribble is an interesting combo. But the question is, how much spacing is the Lakers, you know, are the Lakers really going to have? Not many shooters on the roster once again. So, you know, when Kyle Kuzma's out there, how much space is he really going to operate with? What's the situation going to be like if they've got AD at the five? You know, that makes me think Kuzma might get edged out a little bit. So I think you guys are right to say that to cool on, you know, a lot of people were saying, oh, well, Kuzma's going to start. He is going to start, but what is that really going to mean for his game? Is he really going to be producing in that starting lineup? My initial thought is not as much as he was producing last year. And then looking down the lineup, who else is really going to be there in the backup? JaVale McGee, he's going to give you a lot of value, I think, for the minutes that he plays. He's going to give you blocks. He's going to give you field goal percentage. He's going to give you those rebounds. His minutes are going to go up now, so he's probably a good bet. I could see him falling on a lot of draft boards, just people not really paying attention. And also JaVale McGee has all of the meaning that comes with that name. I think people don't really take him seriously, which, you know, for better or worse, that's fine. So he definitely falls on some people's boards. If you're a contending team and you're looking for those stats, I think he could definitely, you know, someone you could target in the fourth, fifth round range in a big 30 team league. Well, let's say 5th to 6th in a 30 team. And then in a 15, 12 to 15 league, you know, you could be looking for some of that value a little bit later. But, you know, as a general rule, any guy who's giving you, gives you the opportunity to win a category over a couple weeks, like JaVale does with his blocks, that's something you're going to want. And he's not going to be super expensive in a trade scenario due to his age. You know, you wouldn't have to spring too much to get him. If those are stats that you really need, if those are categories that you really need, I think JaVale McGee is a great idea, especially given the fact that the market, like we said, probably won't come back for a relevant time period in a fantasy standpoint. I am interested to see where Jared Dudley fits. I know that seems funny to say. He probably won't get many minutes, but you don't know. You know, you really don't know. With this lineup right now, the way that I'm looking at this, you know, they could lean on him for some games. If you're in a deep league and you need threes and you're kind of looking off of, you know, we don't really stream much in a dynasty, but you know, if you're going to add someone and it's midseason and you're saying, man, who am I looking at? Jared Dudley might not be a horrible choice for threes and, you know, maybe the odd steal here and there. Not a horrible decision if you're dropping someone and you're saying, hey, I need someone to contribute. You know, Jared Dudley might get those minutes. You never know. I could see him put it up. Like, I could see them putting him out there for like 15, 20 minutes because they don't have anyone else to turn to. Why not?
Yeah. I think that's a valid question. You know, Jared Dudley's been on some competitive teams before, and apparently he had a chance to stay in Brooklyn, you know, where he found a nice home last season, but you know, he wanted to come to LA for his swan song, to kind of retire over here while also remaining competitive on the Bronze team. But I think it's a good point you brought up about the spacing that LA could potentially have, or the lack thereof, rather. I think on a LeBron-led team, spacing would be pretty important. I think Cousins could have helped with that. You know, he started developing into not a great three-point shooter, but somebody who can get the ball in the basket from the perimeter. You know, and he kind of fit in that manner. But I don't know who else besides him. You know, there's KCP and Danny Green. Kuzma was about a 36% shooter. I wouldn't call him a sniper by any means or anything like that. But, yeah, I thought that was a pretty good topic to look for this season, to kind of watch as you're watching the Lakers, you know, with them saying LeBron will be predominantly the point guard especially. So I thought that was pretty neat. Anybody got anything else here before we move on to the release of the 2019-20 NBA schedule?
Nothing from me.
Okay. All right, so we all should know by now that the NBA schedule has been released, and in turn, we officially know which players will be playing an ideal number of games in our fantasy playoffs and which players were stuck with, well, less than ideal schedules. There's 11 teams who get to play a total of 11 games from March 16th to April 5th, which is the common fantasy playoff schedule, especially for Yahoo. So that's what I'll be going by here. Those 11 teams are the Pacers, T-Wolves, Grizzlies, Lakers, 76ers, Suns, Raptors, Spurs, Jazz, Wizards, and 76ers. So all these teams have good playoff scheduling. There's only one team that gets only 9 games throughout these playoffs, and that's the Bulls. All the rest of the teams get 10. So right off the bat, first thing I notice is how balanced it is now. You know, you don't have to worry about fighting for a player who plays for one of the three teams that have a good playoff schedule, you know. And I love it. And then real quick, another major change that isn't directly fantasy related is the fact that they moved games earlier. So those late night West Coast games will be a little easier to tolerate on the East Coast. You know, no more trying to fight to stay awake to finish a game and feeling it in the morning. So that kind of makes us all winners.
Very happy about that.
Definitely.
Very happy about that.
For sure.
And I guess speaking of winners, let's go over some players or teams we feel like won or lost with the schedule release. you know, I tend to avoid putting a ton of stock in significantly changing a player's rankings based on the schedule, especially because we're dynasty driven. But there is at least some impact that's unavoidable, especially if you're trying to compete this year. Let's start with the winners, I guess. Kevin, do you have any particular players in mind that you're looking at this season now?
Yeah, you know, I'm looking at sort of the weeks 22 to 24, like you were mentioning. And there's quite a few teams that are 3-4-4 and 4-3-4 and so forth. I tend to like to have, if I can, you know, I don't put a ton of stock into the schedules, especially now that, like you had mentioned, everything seems very balanced. You have 11 on one end and 9 on the other, so there's barely any difference on that. But I do like, if I can choose it, to get the 4 games in the last 2 weeks. So from that, the Pacers and the Suns are the two teams with 11 games that have 4-4 to finish out the season. So obvious guys that, for me, will go up, you know, guys like Devin Booker, DeAndre Ayton from the Suns, and then you have Miles Turner, Oladipo, if depending on how the injury is looking, Malcolm Brogdon, guys like that. We'll get a little bit of a bump on my end. But again, it's very minor. You know, we're kind of splitting hairs to a lot here. And then obviously the loser is going to be the Bulls. So if you're looking at guys like LaVine and Markkanen and Wendell Carter Jr., who can be, you know, really strong players for your team, if you are thinking far ahead into the playoffs and factoring that in, that does dock those guys a little bit. Same thing with the Pelicans. You know, they're definitely one of my favorite teams that I'm looking forward to, but they're finishing with a 4-3-3. You know, guys like Zion and Drew take a little bit of a hit. Same thing with the Warriors. Curry takes a little bit of a hit. Draymond takes a little bit of a hit. You know, just minor, nothing crazy, but if we're going to be sort of dissecting the schedule, that's the kind of stuff that I'm looking at.
Yeah, definitely all valid points. Definitely teams that I was looking at here as well. Tony, I'll move to you. Are you rising and falling on anyone in particular?
I've never really been someone in a dynasty league to look at schedules all that much. It's kind of one of those things that if there's a huge advantage to one team or another, I might try to trade for one of those guys if I'm a contender. And I'm really looking at, I need those playoff weeks to be strong for me. In which case, you can always do that sort of through the course of the season. That's just a strategy point. To look at the scheduling, though, I wanted to add on a point about the Pacers and Phoenix, which is that the Pacers in their last few weeks are not playing very strong teams at all. They're playing Phoenix and Orlando. And then they've got Houston and Sacramento. Houston, you could see them at this time in the season potentially resting guys. Yep. So if they've got a lead and they're not, you know, really pushing for a playoff spot, that's a team that, you know, potentially they might get a benefit there. And then they've also got Washington and Brooklyn, LA, who they'll definitely be resting players. The Clippers as well. They will certainly be resting players at this point. And then in the first week, they've got Miami and Cleveland. So a lot of weak teams and a lot of teams that will likely be resting players. So Indiana is definitely a point where if you're saying, I'm really in contention here, I'll go and get a Malcolm Brogdon, a Sabonis if he's not super expensive. But, you know, just guys who are going to be contributing and making a difference in those games and won't be sitting, because in Oladipo, he might be sitting games out. Miles Turner isn't going to be sitting any games out down the stretch. So also something to consider.
Yeah. Ease of matchups. That's a great point. That's definitely, it's something I always try to watch closely. It's more difficult to determine this before the season, but obviously the worst teams are the worst teams and they're easier to peg down. So that's a great point. And one article I enjoyed writing last year was, it was an article in regards to tips and tricks to help win your fantasy playoffs, and ease of matchups is one of the biggest topics on there. So that's always something great to pay attention to. you know, I look at this schedule and notice a few things, like Anthony Davis and Carl Anthony Towns are my 1 and 2 for dynasty leagues here, and redraft leagues, actually. That might have been the case even before the schedule release, but their playoff schedule has really almost cemented them in there for me now. Obviously, when it comes to AD, you always have to worry about his common questionable and probable tags that seem inevitable. But as far as rest days, it entirely depends on how the rest of that roster is playing. Now that Boogie will likely miss the rest of the season, like we mentioned, that makes AD even more enticing because he works best as a center. But I'll also be watching JaVale and Kuzma, like we mentioned earlier. But I'm also looking at young guys like Jaren Jackson, De'Aaron Fox, and Donovan Mitchell to take that next step and be even more of a valuable asset. And their scheduling really puts the cherry on top here, especially Donovan, who has looked like he's been putting in the work this offseason. Although, one downfall for him for me is that he does have a 1-2 game week, I believe, in the playoffs, which kind of stings a bit. But other than that, he looks good, though. And then Siakam, lastly. If he can find his footing as somewhat of the, I guess, the number one in Toronto, you know, if he can grow comfortable in that role and still find success drawing the opposing team's better defenders now that Kawhi's gone, he can be a hell of a value. And then as far as losers post-schedule release, the biggest thing that stands out to me, like you guys mentioned, is the Chicago Bulls. Man, they really got the shaft here. They're the only team that plays just 9 games in that time span. In redraft leagues and win now teams, for that matter, for dynasty leagues, I'm falling a bit on all Bulls except Wendell Carter Jr. and maybe Markkanen. Now, I wasn't very high on most other Bulls to begin with, but Otto Porter can potentially be a good asset at the right price, but you know, this just tears it for me. I'm not saying to completely avoid all Bulls guys. If a player falls to a good value, you know, I'd certainly take him. But like I said, the playoff schedule obviously matters, but I don't put as much credence into it as some others might. I'm just not excited to take Chicago players for this year. But anybody got anything else on the schedule release, risers and fallers, anything like that?
I just wanted to make another point. I mean, Tony made a good point about, you know, with especially if we're talking dynasty, this matters even less, right, or it weighs even less. But for redraft, obviously, this is a little bit more of a factor. And one thing I've been kind of personally favoring is to start playoffs earlier because of all of the resting and stuff that we've been dealing with in fantasy the last few years. I know Jay and I had a little back and forth with our current league that we're doing right now. I threw out the crazy idea of maybe starting the playoffs right after the All-Star break, because it will be a 16-team playoff, so 4 weeks of playoffs. But we compromised. We're doing it actually throughout the 4 weeks in March. So it is ending a little bit earlier than what's being the standard for Yahoo leagues. But it's just something to think about, because if you can manage to start them a little bit earlier, it can potentially take some of the rest factor out of the equation. And the other thing you have to keep in mind too is players get traded all the time as well. And you never know, and you don't want to put too much stock into these playoff schedules, because you never know. Because you know, everyone, I think last year, I think the Wizards had a good playoff schedule.
Yeah, they did.
And then Otto Porter got traded. So it's like, if you put that weight into, oh, well, I'm going to have Otto for those playoff weeks, and then all of a sudden, you know, he gets traded to Chicago, and that changes everything. So again, you have to take all this stuff with a grain of salt and not make it a major factor in your decisions, particularly in Dynasty, but even in Redraft, you know, because you never know what's going to happen. And like I said, I just wanted to reiterate that you should consider possibly moving your playoffs up early. That this is my opinion, maybe not Jay's. He might like sort of the wacky finishes at the end. For me, I like to try to take that rest component out if I can.
Well, and look, I'm going to throw this out there. I know I might have come off as that when we were discussing this earlier, but I actually am a fan of moving the playoff schedules up. You know, it's not easy to deal with those potential rest days. I do believe that's one aspect of fantasy itself. It always has been for me, so I guess I'm just I'm a stickler for keeping things the way that I'm used to, I guess. It's harder for me to change. So that's always been a component for me. Right, sure. And but I do think it...
A fantasy purist.
I like that. I'm going to make a t-shirt of it. but I do feel like it's probably, I don't know if fairer is the right word, but it makes sense to move your playoff schedules up. And I do believe it's a good idea. So I'm glad we had the compromise to move our playoffs up. I didn't want them all the way going to the end of the season, but anyway, I'm glad we were able to do that. So we can move on to the Unicorn League if you guys are ready to do that.
One last point that I wanted to make on the scheduling. Kevin, I think you're spot on with saying that the trade deadline is an important thing to consider, is to not put too much stake into the playoff schedule question. I also would say that that's why personally I like to wait to make any acquisitions. I like to wait to put too much stake into the playoff conversation, because if you're making decisions at the beginning of your year, even in a redraft, you don't know if you're going to be making the playoffs. So pick guys that are going to help you. And if in the end of the day, you know, it looks like, wow, I am going to make the playoffs, then you can go out and get that guy who, you know, has that favorable playoff schedule. And who knows, in the case of someone being traded, it might be an opportunity to snag someone at a lower cost that has a favorable playoff schedule. So it behooves you, in my opinion, to wait and to make those decisions, those playoff specific, those playoff scheduling decisions. Wait until mid-year before you start making those types of decisions about who to put on your roster. It really shouldn't weigh too heavily on your drafting, very little in your dynasty. And I think that in a redraft, as the year goes on, it becomes more important.
Yeah. And another reason to put more credence into this is because it's much easier to trade a guy with a bad playoff schedule in a dynasty league than it is to do that in a redraft league. Because in a redraft league, obviously, everybody's goal is exactly the same every year, just to win a championship. But in a dynasty league, you know, I might be rebuilding. I want the youth. And if they have a bad playoff schedule, it doesn't matter to me so much, because I'm just trying to pick together the best talent that I can. I want the high upside guys, the high ceiling guys. And it doesn't matter to me so much if their playoff schedule isn't so bad, if I'm not trying to compete. So that, you know, I think we brought up some good points here, and it's definitely not nearly as important as in redraft leagues to pay attention to the playoff schedules. Okay, just to give a quick rundown of the Unicorn League before we get into discussing it. It's a 30-team money league with some pretty stiff competition, actually. In addition to some of the unicorns, we have other websites represented as well. Craig from Razzball, who I consider to be somewhat of a rival due to his in-depth knowledge of prospects. We also have his colleague, Costas, from Razzball as well. Zach from Hoopball, Mike and Tyler from Hashtag Basketball, and numerous other knowledgeable freelancers who should make this league competitive and fun. We even have a former NBA executive in the league. So, you know, I'm looking forward to the season for sure. Now, just to establish our unique ground rules of the league, round one is different than your normal drafts. Whichever team the player you draft plays for, that's the team you become for the league, which makes things very interesting because two players from the same NBA team cannot be picked in round one. For example, our guy Sheamus selected Giannis first overall, making Sheamus the Milwaukee Bucks of our league. But that means no other Milwaukee player can be selected in round one. Obviously, this really shakes things up because there was still some high-level talent available in round two, like Donovan Mitchell, Porzingis, Ayton, Kawhi, and so on. The last two picks of round one were Miles Bridges and Kevin Love, which I thought was pretty interesting, you know, just to give you guys an example there. To help level the playing field, rounds two and on are all a fixed order. Fellow Unicorn Jesse was the one who had that last pick, so he will actually be selecting first in every other round. So to add another layer of thought, we hit up a random number generator and allowed each person to pick their draft spot. I chose to draft with the 26th pick in round one, giving me the fifth pick in all other rounds. After splitting up all potential selections into tiers in the first few rounds, especially round one, I decided I'd be okay with taking that later pick in round one in order to pick early in all other rounds. The only teams I particularly wanted to avoid were the Cavs, Spurs, and maybe Hornets. I was kind of on the fence about them. So getting that 26th round one pick allowed me to do that. So I just want to hear any particular reasoning you guys might have had when thinking about selecting a draft spot. Kevin, you picked second overall, I believe. Any significant reason why you chose that spot? And also, let us know who you picked and why you liked them there.
Sure. When we ran the random number generator, I think I had like the 9th pick to choose my spot. So I had a lot of options early on. And so I opted for the 2nd pick because I knew I wanted one of the top three guys, in my opinion, which for Dynasty, I had AD and Kat and Giannis sort of at the top for me, just based off of their potential and their current production and their age and all that. To me, they were sort of the top three. And I knew I would guarantee myself one of those players. I've done this type of draft before, and I've sort of taken your strategy of trying to go further back in the first round to get earlier picks in the subsequent rounds. And for some reason, it didn't work out for me. And so I wanted to try a different strategy this time. And so I wanted to just go for one of the elite guys. And I figured, rather than get the last pick of every round, I'll get the second to last pick and guarantee that I'll get one of my guys. So that's why I ended up picking the second spot. And I took Kat after Seamus took Giannis.
Yeah, because Giannis is the number one option, by the way. Jay, I heard you say earlier that you had AD and Kat as your top two. That's absurd, but let's not get to that right now. Go ahead.
But yeah, so I went with Kat, and I'm just going to bite the bullet. And to me, it's just basically I'm drafting towards the end of the round, but that's fine because it's a fixed order, and I was willing to take that just so that I could get one of my elite guys. So,
yeah, I thought it was interesting. I think in the random number generator, I got 8, if I'm not mistaken, and so I got to pick my spot right before you. So when I picked closer to the end of the first round and then you picked early, I thought that was kind of interesting. And I'll get into more of that in a little bit after Tony lets us know why he opted to go right kind of in the middle at pick 16. All very good options, in my opinion. I don't think you can really go wrong in this format. So tell us who you chose and if there's any particular reason why you liked picking at that spot, Tony.
Yeah, so I didn't get as lucky as y'all. I was, I think, 23rd in the random number generator. So I didn't have as many spots available to me to pick from. I think, I don't exactly remember, but I think I had some open spots like 6, 7, 8. And then there were some spots right in the middle. And then there was the 28, 29, 30 spots that were available. So I was one of the last people that had a shot to get one of these middle spots. And in my initial franchise ranking in the 14 to kind of 17 spot, I had I had a bunch of guys who actually ended up going in that order. I had kind of Portland, Atlanta, Sacramento, and Utah. Utah ended up going a little bit later, but with Rudy Gobert, I had Donovan Mitchell, and I thought that he was going to go, but that's for another conversation. Yeah. So I kind of looked at that list, and I said to myself, the middle isn't so bad. And to your point, Jay, I think you're absolutely right. You can make any draft position when you're doing it this way. And I do think this is the preferred way to do a kickoff draft for a 30-team dynasty. You can make any position in this initial draft work for you if you sort of embrace the strategy that comes with it. For me, at 16, I picked Fox with Sacramento. I was ecstatic to be able to get him. I think that he's really high upside opportunity player. I think that, he's one of the best in an extremely deep position. He gives you steals. He gives you points.
He gives you a decent field goal percentage for a guy who scores a lot, which is, I think, underrated from the point guard position to have someone, because there's so many guys who have bad field goal percentages. He obviously isn't a great free throw shooter, but that's actually something that you can build around in your team. And we'll get to that a little bit later. In my opinion, for the subsequent rounds, I'm picking at 15 in every single round. So my number doesn't change ever. It's always right in the middle. What that does for me, and the benefit of that for me, in my perspective, is that it gives me the flexibility to move up and down in a round. So, you know, I'm not at the beginning, which kind of limits you to moving back in a round. And I'm not at the end, which forces me to kind of move up in a round, which ultimately at the end, it doesn't really matter. But in the beginning, that kind of jockeying for position, really where we're drafting right now, it becomes important. So I was able to use, you know, today, this morning, I made a deal to jump up and select Thomas Bryant with pick 4 in the second round, which translates to something around the 64th pick in the draft. Some would say it's a reach, but, you know, for me, I'm building a young team. My second pick was Marvin Bagley. So building that team out, for me, I was saying, I'm going to use my mid pick in the second round. You know, I packaged it with a third round upgrade for the person I was trading with, as well as a deep late round upgrade from, I believe, 9 to 7 for them. To me, that was worth it. Allowed me to jump up 11 spots, pick up Thomas Bryant. He definitely wouldn't have made it to me at 15, but having that 15th pick gave me the flexibility to kind of move up. And I had also considered in the round before potentially moving back. So, you know, it's a nice spot to pick from. I think some people are unsure because it's right in the middle. And I certainly was a little bit too, but having now played with it and thought through the strategy, it's not a horrible place to pick.
Yeah, I agree. I was actually considering going somewhere in the middle of the draft initially before I changed my mind 27 other times. And then I actually, you know, like I said, I ended up settling on 26 after looking at who could potentially be left over in the second round. And like I mentioned earlier, it was Kawhi, it was DeAndre Ayton, it was Porzingis, and it was Donovan Mitchell was there as well, which I actually expected that to be Rudy Gobert, but I'm not mad at the guy who
picked
Gobert over Mitchell. You know, I think depending on your style and who you want there and all that, you know, that's not a bad pick at all, for sure. So that's why I ended up going with 26. I was thinking I could still get a top-tier talent at the beginning of the second round. You know, Ben Simmons was still there as well, obviously, and the list goes on. But
he was off the board. He was off the board first.
He was
in that second round.
Yeah, Unicorn Jesse actually took him, and I was kind of surprised about that. I mean, not too shocked. You know, Ben Simmons has the pedigree and he has the talent. It was just the punting categories that always holds him down. But if he can get those in order, you know, he's a future, you know, all NBA type talent. So just to get into this a little bit more, like I alluded to a minute ago, I think it's pretty cool that each of us three chose to draft at complete opposite ends of the spectrum here. You know, I picked late, Tony picked in the middle, and Kev went very early, like we all mentioned. You know, you got to love fantasy basketball like that. To each his own. Just to top this off, I selected Lauri Markkanen with my 26th overall pick in the first round. It was really a toss-up between he and his teammate Wendell Carter for me. I also consider Jimmy Butler, who I believe went 27 right after me, if I'm not mistaken. But when I'm on the fence, I'll usually lean toward youth, which eliminated Butler for me. And then I went with Lowry over WCJ because I expected Markkanen's trade value to be just a bit higher at this point, at this moment. But I'm a big fan of hustle stats, especially blocks. So after taking some time to ponder it after I picked Lowry, and just to mention this, we did the first round and then waited a month before hitting up the second round. So we all had plenty of time to consider our picks.
So much time.
Yeah.
So much time.
It was torture. But anyway, I ended up flipping Lowry for the 9th pick of round 2. And wouldn't you know who I drafted with that pick? Wendell Carter Jr. So I felt kind of silly, but I really wasn't planning on taking him round two. I was leaning more toward Drew because I think Drew Holiday is going to have a career year, but I really do see top 25-ish, top 30 potential in Wendell Carter. I just don't trust Jim Boylan, but that's also another beauty of dynasty leagues. You know, he could be out soon, and you know, I still have WCJ for years to come. But I think Carter will get there. You know, it might just take some time. So now my team consists of WCJ and Porzingis, who I took with that early second-round pick. So, you know, risky young bigs with high upside is just my forte. And then I end up going with Favors for my next pick. He probably won't get quite back up to when he was like a top 30 guy. If you even, you know, a lot of people might not even remember, you know, Favors was that good a while back before Rudy Gobert broke out. But I might not expect him to get quite back up that high, but I do expect Favors to, you know, crack the top 40-ish again. Anyway, we'll get into any other last thoughts or ideas. If anybody has any, Tony, you got anything that kind of piqued your interest about the league, any other particular picks or anything like that?
You know, I think one point that I want to make, and it's, I've been doing these 30-team dynasty leagues now for going on 4 years. And, you know, it's interesting kind of seeing how people's mentality has changed from year to year. I remember earlier on, people would shoot for contention and really gun for it in this initial draft. We hadn't really seen much of that. There are a lot of guys on the board still who are really great contributors, veteran contributors. We saw guys, fall pretty deep. You have your guys like your CJ McCollums and your Blake Griffins who in a redraft would definitely be going much higher. In your dynasty leagues, a lot of teams, I'd say probably more than half of the teams in the first round of this draft went for a youth pick over a veteran pick. And to me, that's really interesting because I remember in my early years, people would definitely be making the play for the veteran guy to build that contender. But I think now people are recognizing that in these dynasty leagues, you need to play it long and slow and make decisions and go with youth because those are the highest value guys. And you get those guys early and then you can fill in the blanks with those veteran guys because they're going to drop. And you're not utilizing a high pick for those guys because you're hoping at least that you'll be able to get them in rounds 3 and 4. But that was just something that I found really interesting.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I do remember early on in my fantasy career, it was all about winning. Even early on in my dynasty career, you know, it seemed like most of the league, we picked these veteran guys earlier than we are now. But I enjoy rebuilding. You know, it's no secret to anybody who knows me. I enjoy the youth and the upside and all that. And it seems kind of odd to inadvertently describe myself as someone who does not enjoy winning, because that's basically what I'm saying when I say that I enjoy the rebuilding portion of these teams. But I mean, it's true. And, you know, I do play in a couple of redraft leagues every year still, and I'm always close to the top. So I always have those to fall back on. But these dynasty leagues, especially the 30-team leagues, I really enjoy taking a flyer on somebody who I watched closely in college or somebody who I like to cheer for and you know, and so on. So I thought that was a good point for sure. Kevin, you got anything, general thoughts about this league or something that caught your eye?
Yeah, no, it was a good point that you guys were making that it seems like a lot of teams are valuing youth. And that is something that's a little bit unique here. There's a couple teams, I believe Peter's team, OKC, has Westbrook and LeBron. And Terry's team has Harden and LaMarcus Aldridge. So those are two teams that I think are kind of in the win now and have gone big on the vets that are going to help right away.
But I would toss in Miami into that mix too. They've got Butler, Leonard, Kawhi, and Brogdon.
There you go. Yeah. So, I mean, there's a couple of those teams that are kind of poised to potentially have that initial impact in the league. But I think, you know, to me, you know, as I kind of take a step back and look at it, it's probably a good sign that so many teams are thinking long term, because one of the things that you do have to consider when you're doing dynasty leagues and you're starting up leagues and things is you hate it when all of a sudden there's just all this turnover. People are putting teams together and then ditching them after a year and so forth. But, you know, hopefully people are thinking long term and are going to be patient and going to kind of put in the work to build their team, knowing that maybe they won't compete for the first 2 years, but, you know, they could put something really special together after that. And, you know, to me, that's just a sign of a healthy league and a good group of guys that are kind of in it for the long haul. And so to me, those are good signs. And, you know, hopefully that's what this is an indication of. But that's just kind of my take on what's going on right now. You know, and I mentioned I went with Kat, second pick. I've only had one other pick, which was Lonzo, who maybe not the best fit with Kat, but he's a guy that I think has a really nice ceiling, and actually probably a really nice floor too, just because he can produce in so many categories. And one of the things too to keep in mind is youth is a premium, and you're going to get much more value in any sort of transaction you have with another team if you're bringing youth to the table in most situations. So, you know, I was in another league where I was rebuilding and I was trying to get rid of Kevin Love, and you know, you think that I was trying to trade, you know, some nobody because no one wanted to touch
Carmelo.
Him. Yeah, basically, you know, I definitely did not get full value for him, you know, partially because of injury history, but a lot of it due to his age, you know, and he's kind of past his peak at this point. And, you know, for a lot of teams, they just have no interest in it, or they're only going to give, you know, the minimum offer for that. So you have to keep in mind sort of the interpreted value of these players based off of their youth and potential when you're thinking dynasty as well, because those are the guys that are going to give you flexibility and movement when you're trying to pull off trades to make a specific type of build for your team.
To support that point, you know, I mentioned earlier how in the second round, I moved up from 215, round two, pick 15, which corresponds to the 45th overall pick. I moved up from that spot to go up to the 34th pick, pick four in the second round, to grab Thomas Bryant because of that exact reason, because I saw that, you know, there's so much premium being put on the youth that you have to go up and get that guy, because if you guys noticed, the center rotation for young guys is incredibly thin right now. So if you're going to find someone who recoups value in the center position, which is not many guys right now, if you look across the board, you kind of got your older centers who are on cheap NBA contracts, who, you know, are backup guys or late starter, you know, end of rotation starter guys. And then you have the young center kind of phenom type guy, or, you know, or potential high potential guy. And there's really nothing in between. Right. So, you know, you need to go up and this is where, you know, reading the league becomes really important in these types of drafts, you know, see what people are putting a premium on. And act accordingly. You know, if I'm and if I'm Miami, right, where I've got, and Miami was the team that I made the deal with, they've got Butler. They drafted, like I said, Kawhi Leonard. That team is not, that's not a youth team, right? He's not going to be drafting the youngest guys. So he was happy to move back because he knew what type of a premium those young guys are playing. And so he might get some later round value out of moving back now, and he might be able to bolster his depth, which is really important for a contending team. So finding that's a mutually beneficial trade, if you might say, Mr. Kevin, there you go.
I'm on board.
You know, but that's the type of thinking I think that helps out when you're kind of seeing what's getting overvalued.
Yeah, it's kind of why I went with Porzingis and Wendell Carter, and then even Derek Favors early on. I know Derek Favors isn't quite as young, but, you know, he just turned 28 and, you know, is right at the peak of his prime here. And I believe he's going to have a great couple seasons in New Orleans, assuming he stays beyond this year. And it's also why, you know, John Collins and Miles Turner, et cetera, is going so high, and Thomas Bryant and all them. You know, yeah. You got to, like you said, it's very top heavy. The young center position is very top heavy. They got a lot of potentially elite talent at the top. Even Bam Adebayo is going to be going way earlier than normal.
Bam went 44 overall.
Yeah. You know, I don't hate it. I think he's going to have a
good That's about right, but that's high, you know.
Right, it's exactly. High. But and just to go back to OKC one more time, I think I kind of like what they've done here. You know, they've certainly moved away from the youth movement here. They got Russell Westbrook and then traded for LeBron James, I believe. And then they drafted Draymond Green with their third pick. And I think
it's going to be a good team.
Right. Those three guys that have very similar strengths, and they're going to help that team a lot. You know, they're going to struggle in free throw percentage. Obviously, he knows that. He's probably punting it. But they're going to put up tons of rebounds, assists, steals. Assists. You know, exactly. So I just wanted to touch on that real quick. I thought that was
That's a good team.
I like what he's done there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, if nobody else has anything else, you know, I'd say it's about time to wrap it up here. You know, we'll see how the rest of this slow draft plays out and maybe discuss it a bit more next week. You know, real quick, we'll hit on anything happening on the site soon. You know, that's thefantasyunicorns.com. I know we've all been working on our redraft rankings. Mine are basically done now. I just have to kind of plug them in. Actually, I did just plug them in last night. I don't know if I've published yet, though, but I will be doing that very soon, if not tonight. You guys are basically done, too, right? Or almost there with your...
Yeah, no, I started mine. I'm probably okay through the first 100 or so, but after that, I kind of just left it.
Yeah, I knew you guys started on it. I didn't know how far you were. So
I'm trying to detangle my brain out of Dynasty land and get into redraft mode.
It's so difficult.
It's a really big, I mean, it's a shockingly big difference in the way that you value guys for Dynasty versus redraft. You know, I mean, it's the Andre Iguodala conundrum, you know, yeah. Like you could justify drafting Andre in a redraft in, you know, sixth, seventh round. Yeah. In a Dynasty, Andre could be in our free agent pool at the end of our draft.
Yeah,
you know, it's really interesting because he's got a year left, maybe a couple years left. Yeah. Right. So it's interesting. Anyway, the point is I'm thinking about it and I'm trying to get my mind right before I get the redraft rankings out.
Yeah. They're definitely completely different animals, redraft and Dynasty. But you know, maybe we can touch on those rankings and compare them a bit next week or, you know, sometime soon. Hopefully we can also get to working on our Dynasty rankings soon. I think we're waiting on a third party to be able to get that done. But and then I've also been taking a lot of notes on next year's prospects, you know, as far as NBA prospects who will be in college or overseas this coming season. But, you know, I don't plan on changing the prospect rankings page on our site until maybe about a month into the season or so. And, of course, the articles should start picking back up as the season nears. But, well, you can follow me on Twitter at FantasyNBALayup. Where can they follow you at, Tony?
I am at Who's Your Papa 11 on Twitter.
Great. It's a great tag. It's a great tag.
Yeah, thank you. I work really hard. I'm a big punter.
It's a great pun. And Kevin, I'll allow a shameless plug to your Taco Bell podcast if you want. And,
yeah.
But, you know, if not, you know, let them know where they can follow you.
Well, first you can follow me at Kevin So, no pun there. And you could also check out my Taco Bell appreciation podcast, the 7-Layer podcast. It's on all the podcast formats and on Twitter at 7-Layer podcast. So definitely hit us up with any of that Taco Bell hot takes that you might have. And we should have a new episode coming out soon.
For sure. Sounds good. I might be getting me a Mexican pizza tomorrow, depending on how things shake out for work.
Make sure you wash it down with a Baja Blast and you'll be good.
Oh, there's nothing else to do there.
That's right.
That's the choice. All right, Fantasy Fiends. Well, I've had a blast here on episode one of the new Fantasy Unicorns podcast. Be sure to check out our merchandise on the site, as well as our rankings coming at you soon. And we'll catch y'all next week. Later.